Welcome to A Call to Lead at LifeScience.org, where we explore the leadership journeys facing life science entrepreneurs. I'm David Kirk, and in each episode, I sit down with a life science leader to uncover the moments that define their leadership. My guest this week.
Hi, I'm Dominik Schumacher. I'm the CEO of Tubulith, a biotech company based in Munich, and we develop antibody drug conjugates for treatment of various solid tumor types, and we have two phase one and 2A molecules currently in clinical trials.
We're grateful at LifeScience.org to have a community of over 400 life science CEOs, leaders driving change in biotech, medtech, tech bio, and healthcare. The conversations inside our community, stories of conviction, navigating challenges, and making bold decisions inspire us every week. Now we're sharing them with the world. Dominik, thank you for joining me.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
So you have an amazing background, and I want to just dive right in to the first big thing that cropped up for me, which was your father co-founded Qiagen. How do we pronounce it?
Qiagen, and the history of the name is actually, originally was Diagen. It's a German-based company. It was founded out of the lab of Professor Riesner in Darmstadt, and they moved to Düsseldorf, and next, close to Düsseldorf, they then had the headquarters, and it still is there. And it was called Diagen back then, Diagen, and then they formed it to Qiagen, the German way to pronounce it, but internationally it's pronounced Qiagen.
Yeah, I've heard every pronunciation, I think, under the sun, having worked across Europe. And it's great to finally have the real answer. You must have grown up then with life science being such a big part of your life. Tell me, what was that like first experience with it like, and how did that influence your leadership journey?
I mean, yeah, it's right. I've been, science has been all around us all the time. My mom studied chemistry. My dad is a biologist. But actually, my most intense memories that I have with Qiagen is these little blue kits that everybody probably has. But I was using them as a small kid when I was four or five. I was using them just to play with them, running water through them. I didn't have a clue what was in there, that it's actually quite expensive material that was in there. But it was cool. And then we were in the storage departments of Qiagen, just being there with the people that work there and playing around. So that is my first memory of the company and the experience. And then, of course, and that is actually something that is really important also for me, is there were many ups and downs and like extreme downs where it was really also critical and the company close to filing bankruptcy. And going through that ups and downs, and also really going through the phases where we were really making sure that, or my family was making sure to keep the money close, that was actually quite helpful for me to understand it. Then on the other side, obviously, having with my father a role model that was just enjoying what he did. I think he's an amazing leader, but also never putting any pressure on us what we want to do. He had a lot, he spent, I don't know how he did it, but somehow he was always spending a lot of time with us and still creating this company. But actually that was really driving something. You know, I was like, okay, I want to create a company as well. Naive, totally naive, because I didn't know what it means, but it was really, that was my goal.
Yeah. And tell me about that, I guess, first jump into leadership for yourself, because I know you have that academic scientific background, and you kind of moved into investment as well with the family office.
Well, and really started with the first being fascinated about changing something and just taking the responsibility to do that. And there were I had many ideas when I was growing up. For example, back then we still were watching these classical televisions, and I was always like, why do we do that? Why can I not decide I want to watch a show when it's time for it? So I was trying to set up something, was doing programming for it and stuff. But of course, it was just me, so it didn't work out. But now it's the reality that we're living in. And there was another idea that I had, because in Germany, it, actually, you still do it like that. When you go to a doctor, you get a prescription on paper. So I thought, that's totally nonsense. Why do we need to do it like that? We can just have a totally automated. You go to a doctor, it automatically goes to the pharmacy, and then they send the medicine home to you. You don't even have to go there. So I was, that was my second idea. And then I was even talking to pharmacy association in Germany. And they told me, yeah, probably that's not going to work because our clients are 80 plus year olds. That's our key clients. They want to have the paper. They love the paper. So I got scared by that. And I stopped that project as well. And that was kind of a time, I was like 15 years old or six. And then I realized, okay, if you want to do something like that, it's good to not do it alone. And then I went the classical way, like decided to do some studies, economics and chemistry, and then did a PhD and chemistry as well. And that I was clearly looking for a project that could be translatable and people that I would like to do that with. And I found Jonas, he's our CSO now, and he's the co-founder of the company Tubulus. And basically we met back then and we started to pipette on stuff together in the lab, and I've been working on this ever since. And the great thing about this was that there was a tremendous amount of trust between Jonas and me from day one. And then we just continued and somehow grew into that leadership. But there was also always a little bit of naivety involved from my end. And I talked to about Jonas, but for me it was. And it is also good, because if you know the entirety of the ride when you started, I don't know if everybody would start it. And I don't know if I would have started it. Probably yes, but I'm not sure. So it's also good that there's a little bit of naivety when you build a company. But that's how I got into it.
Yeah, I like that, how you invented streaming and this automated prescription thing years before they became
I'm pretty sure
reality.
That many people have been thinking about it, but I was just so annoyed that I couldn't watch my show when I wanted to watch it and when I had time for it. But that was
I know that feeling. I think a lot of people listening will relate to that. Not anymore, maybe, but if
not
you grew
anymore,
up in the 90s, certainly. You mentioned a couple of challenges with that, in that there was this feeling of going it alone, and maybe this element of naivety. But I'd love to know, was there a personal challenge that you faced or a particular obstacle that you had to overcome on that leadership journey?
I think there were probably a few things that you just need to grow. I mean, first of all, I think when you do something like that, you in general need to have the ability to constantly develop yourself also and question yourself and have the drive to be grow. And just as, I mean, what have been examples at day one, when we started this, I think, and this is probably really typical for many founders of companies. Jonas and I have been doing, we did everything together because it's just been the two of us. Huh? And then you just need to, everything we had been doing, everything together. And then it's a natural point of the company. We had to decide, okay, who's actually taking what responsibilities? And that needed to be very clear way of communication between us and trust. That's why it's so important to have the trust. So you need to let go. It's totally fine that you don't have the 100% oversight of things, but you just need to have people that are really good at what they do. So you can just relax and trust them. And you know that if there's something that you need to know, they will tell you. And that was just something that I did not foresee when we started. I never thought about it. So at some point, it just was very clear that we need to do that. And the other part of it is actually when you build a team and hire a team and you have never basically done it before, which was the case for me. Of course, I had a team when I was at university. We had a small lab at university and stuff, but it's different. If you build a large team, it's actually the amount of time that you need to dedicate to just that and to the people. I underestimated it. But it's good. Invested time, actually. And it's something that I needed to grow into a little bit for sure. And then the challenge that probably also every younger founder and leader in the life sciences or anywhere has is you need to come, if you want to build a family and a company at the same time, that's challenging.
Yeah. I'm going back to this point of trust, because it's come up now a couple of times that you've mentioned, and especially in the context of your co-founders and building a team with two big topics in Life Science Org. How do you cultivate trust or select trust, select for trust, I guess, when you're hiring to build that team?
Yeah. We are very transparent about that. That we, as leaders in the company, give a lot of trust to our employees. And this is, it comes with small things like trust how they do their work, that they do their work when they do their work. And of course, we also ask people always the question whether they think they can live in or work in such an environment. Because some people just don't, they want to have clear guidance. They want to have, okay, now you need to do this, now you need to do that, now you need to do that. And for us, it was always really important that there is just everybody basically gets their free way of working, because people work very differently also. And this is just something that we communicate or that we talk about from day one. And so far, we have been extremely fortunate to hire people that really live this culture as well. But I really think the important part is that you need to give everybody the feeling, as leaders and the team, that this is not just a saying, we just say it, but it's actually really true. We trust our employees a lot.
Yeah. And looking at, because you've been embedded in the life science space in Europe for almost your entire life, you know, I'd love to know your perspective on the shared challenges that exist between life science leaders today.
I mean, I think in general, there's a few things that always have been within the community in life sciences, and that has been, especially in Europe, when it comes to funding of these businesses, has always been challenging. I mean, back in the days when QIAGEN was founded, there didn't exist any kind of financing environment structure for these kinds of biotech. It just didn't exist. In the end, it was private money that really got the company going. In the first place. And now, of course, there's a lot more structured investment opportunities, but still, it's very challenging. And it's still, the focus in Europe still has not been shifting as much to life sciences. We, obviously, from this scene, would say that it's needed and it's the right thing to do, because actually we are very competitive. And we are very... we have unique talent, extremely good science, and this is actually something where we can really differentiate also internationally. When you look at the entire ecosystem, I think it's imminent that there is a lot of uncertainty right now in the field, coming from the US with restructuring of regulatory authorities, the macroeconomic challenges that we currently see with shift in how we think about tariffs. And this is obviously all, it's not only affecting life sciences, obviously, but it's also affecting life sciences. So there's a lot of uncertainty. My hope was really that there's a big shift in Europe after seeing what biotech and life science can actually do during corona times, with how fast drugs actually got to the market. BioNTech, obviously, and UTEP also really doing pioneering work there. But actually, it was not as much as I hoped that there is a shift towards how life science and biotech is seen in the public. In the public eye, and this is definitely something where we have the responsibility to change that and work for it and make people really recognize that this is a unique chance for Europe, Germany, all European countries basically to really make a change and a step forward.
As you well know, that peer-to-peer learning is huge. And I would love to know from you what you have learned from a peer or a colleague that you just couldn't possibly have learned from formal education.
Look, of course. I mean, but there's not a single one. I think it's very various different people that had a tremendous impact in my life, in my professional life. And of course, it starts with my father, just seeing how he has approached things, how he has been interacting with people, what kind of culture they were living in the companies, and also going through these failures. I mean, it's... And they've been doing many... they had so many ideas. Most of them didn't work out. But in the end, it was QIAGEN. Evotech came out of that group, and also a smaller company called New Life. So I think it was a successful group, and they never gave up. So that definitely, Jonas, as we have been through this amazing journey together. And of course, the many, many discussions that I also have with our chairman of Tubulus, Christian. He's so knowledgeable. He has been through so many biotech companies, ups and downs, has seen a lot, and is just an amazing support for the company.
I'm picking out a few keywords from what we've said so far. I'm just thinking your autobiography, the Dominic Schumacher story, is going to be resilience and trust.
Yeah.
Those are the two key themes. The key themes coming out. And they're important themes for leaders in life science, because they come up so often as well, as we see in our community. Now, before we talk about Tubulus in more detail, mm-hmm. we've already touched on the reality of life science in Europe. I'd like to know if there's any one thing that particularly stands out for you as inspiring or exciting about European life sciences today.
The quality of the science and the mindset of the people, commitment of the people, how they can really fall in love with a specific idea and then just be totally creative and have fun about it. I think that's really what I think is special about Europe.
The mindset of science in Europe. Expand on that idea for me a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's really just being very diligent, but really having a lot of fun around the science, being totally data driven, being in the focus, really being committed to a specific goal. The company, people are very committed to companies, and the reason is because they want to achieve this goal that the company has. And license for us, of course, it's to help patients with our molecules, and we have a lot of the people are just there, and they just want to follow that goal, and they think it's amazing to be part of that journey. And I think this is special for Europe. There's other areas in the world where people are more focused on their individual career, jumping from company to company, which is totally makes sense, and I totally understand that. But I think for a company like ours, it's actually very good to have that mindset of being committed to just providing benefit for patients with our lead assets and try to really get this done right, because you need the knowledge, right? With every person leaving the company, you also lose a little bit of knowledge. So it really helps us a lot. And I think this is something very strong. And again, that the quality of the people. I mean, when we have people coming from universities, first timers coming into the job there, their knowledge is extremely robust and it's just high quality.
Yeah, I think you can have every SOP under the sun, but nothing beats that lived experience of a very experienced researcher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So given everything we've discussed up until now, your leadership journey, the challenges you've faced and kind of the state of Europe today, tell me about Tubulus. What is the great unmet need that you're facing?
Yeah, well, we are working on antibody drug conjugates, and this is a concept that is not new. The idea that you take an antibody that detects a tumor in a patient, and you attach to it a chemotherapeutic drug. And by attaching it to the antibody, the antibody delivers it to the tumor, and the tumor gets harmed, and the healthy cell, in the best case, stays untouched. And by that, you have better therapeutic window, less toxicities, better tolerability with good efficacy. And what we see in the field, I mean, it's been around for a while. It's actually quite challenging to generate these molecules. And when we started the project, it was at a time when all companies, pharma companies, were actually saying, we get rid of our ADC programs because there has been so many failures. And people ask us, why are you doing ADCs? This concept doesn't work. And we were just saying, no, that's the reason why we're doing it, because we believe that we have a different angle on it. So what we do is we actually try to minimize these toxicities that you still see with ADCs, because it's in reality, it's you do have interactions with healthy tissues. These molecules lose the payload on the way to the tumor, so it can do a toxicity again. And they aggregate because the payload, the chemotherapeutic molecule, is usually very hydrophobic. The antibody loses water, so it's basically the opposite. And you put that together and it just crashes. And then you have hydrophobicity as a key issue. And we have invented a platform that enables us to do ADCs that are totally stable in terms of they don't lose a payload. But at the same time, they are hydrophilic. They don't start to aggregate. They don't interact with healthy tissue. And thus, we really have the ability to maximize the chemotherapeutic molecule to be delivered to the tumor and allow minimize off-target effect. And this is important because when you look at also right now, ADCs are, everybody's excited about ADCs, as we are. And there's a lot of reasons for it, because these molecules provide a lot of benefit for patients. You have good overall response rates for these molecules are really good compared to chemotherapy. But when it comes to durability, it's actually not that differentiated yet. And this is driven by toxicities coming up. Patients need to be dose reduced, and then you rapidly go out of the therapeutic window. And that's exactly what we want to try to change. Have molecules that you can treat longer the patient because you don't hit the tolerability window, toxicity window yet. And that's really important, I believe, because in the end, we want to keep these patients as long as possible on therapy with clinical benefit, to make sure that they have really meaningful duration, prolongation of their life, basically, without having massive toxicities, which is really then killing their really the life benefit. It's basically not there anymore. And that's what we try to do. We have two clinical assets. and one is top 40 in ovarian cancer, non-small cell lung cancer, it's in endometrial, thyroid cancer, and we have another molecule, top 30, that is a pan-solid tumor ADC that we're testing in various different solid tumor indications.
And it sounds like you're really addressing that stability and hydrophobicity kind of aggregation issue that has been plaguing the ADC space for so long. And tell me, why is now such a critical time for you? I know you've mentioned a few indications you're looking at.
It's a critical time because for the company, and it's an amazing time because we have now pushed two molecules into clinical trials. All that, what I just described, we've seen actually preclinically. And now we move that into clinical trials and seeing the translatability of the platform, that is important, of course, and really understanding how these molecules work, how's the benefit that we can provide for patients. So it's an extremely exciting 2025 for the company. And we can't wait to see more data and talk about our data once the time is right.
Yeah, and I know you've been busy because I've been trying to talk to you all year since this is literally the start of 2025. So I know it's been a very busy time. Tell me, imagining that everything goes to plan, everything works, you get the right results, you get the funding to see it through. What impact do you hope to create with Tubulus? What does the world look like when you're successful?
I think this company has all it takes to build a company. We have an amazing team. We have a really amazing team that is really great to work with. We have an amazing platform that enables us to build these molecules in a very differentiated way, very flexible. Our R&D group is an innovation powerhouse. It always is. I'm always thinking, how are they doing this? How in this speed and with this intensity of output? So I really think that we can continue to provide innovation in that field, and we consider us as a leader in pushing the boundaries for ADCs. And based on that, I believe that we can build a company here. Do something great for Europe, but also of course across the world.
That's a wonderful vision. I think we don't get an awful lot of that big picture thinking in Europe, building a big company. So it's lovely to hear that. Finally, the last thing, Dominic, I want to ask you, with the last few minutes of your podcast, and this is very much your podcast, what have we not discussed that you would like to talk about in your last few minutes?
One thinking or one idea that I'm carrying or thinking about for a while is, as we have all the DNA, we have all the ingredients to really make amazing science, make and actually also build amazing life science companies. How do we actually enable and support we as people that are doing it to build our infrastructure that we can actually really accelerate that further? Because I think all the ingredients are there. So what do we need to do? And I've finished this thinking yet, but I definitely think that we should be more outspoken about the journey, talk very early to people, to students, to young professionals about this journey, and really also educate people that failure is actually part of that journey. There is still, I feel, might change slowly, but there's still a failure is not good idea or thinking in our heads in Europe. Not in every country, it differs, but, and I think it's totally wrong. It's actually totally right. Failure is actually a good thing, and you need to just learn and grow from it, and just taking these fears maybe away, but also And this is something that I really think is crucial in Europe, mainly from my experience also that I had in Germany. We need to enable people to actually get to a position where they can grow with a company as well, as co-founders, as founders of companies, to really let go of the fear that changing views and changing your personally, growing personally, letting go of things is actually a good thing and makes you grow even bigger and faster. And I think this is something that our community can actually do a lot, because everybody that has been doing this and everybody who has built a company from scratch in our field or wherever, they have gone through this journey, this personal journey. And we always talk about the professional picture and how companies have been built, but this personal part of it and what has really changed. And you touched about this in this podcast now, so I really like that. But I think we should do this a little bit more aggressively and really talk. Go to students, go to universities. I don't know. I have courses there and stuff like that, because I think this is a key hurdle that we still have next to the financing stuff that everybody talks about. And I think this is really also a key hurdle there we need to overcome.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is a wonderful note to end your podcast on. Dominic, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
David, that was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Everybody knows that Europe is a global leader in generating translational science. We also have world-class leadership talent. To hear the stories, lessons, and experiences of our science leaders, listen to A Call to Lead at Life Science Org, available on all good podcasting platforms.